Welcome to the Cigar Lounge, the official podcast of the Cigar Peg, where you get to know your friends a little better, learn a little bit more about each other, and grow as a community. And this week, we welcome into the Cigar Lounge, Carolyn Strauss. Carolyn, how are you?
Hold on, I'm just taking my final puff of the cigar, and I am good, Joe. How are you, love?
I am absolutely awesome. So good to have you here. I always start off with a general question, Carolyn, and I'm going to ask you the same, which is, tell us all a little bit about what you do.
I am one of the top female MCs in the United States. I speak on sales, persuasion, and execution. I help companies get more done with less.
Awesome. And how long have you been a speaker?
My mom said I started talking coming out of the womb. So at least 49 years.
There you go. I'm not laughing at the 49 years. I'm laughing at the speaking coming out of the womb. Let's make that very clear for the listeners. So the the question is, professionally speaking, as a speaker on the stage, how long have you been doing that?
I have never had a real job. So the answer is, since I went to school for acting, I have a BFA in theater. I went to Emerson College in Boston, have a BFA in theater, and literally started making my living as a speaker. In fact, quick story, I don't think I've ever told anybody. When I was in college, when I was in college in Boston, I wanted to do this because I saw Tony Robbins when I was like 20. Then I moved to New York City. And one of my first weeks in New York City, I found one of those seminar training companies. I was 21 years old. And I walked in and I walked up to the desk and I said, "Hi, you should hire me because I'm an incredible keynote speaker and I could train your materials." And they said, "You should go away until you grow up." And I said, "No, I'm going to do this." So I knew I wanted to do this from the moment I stepped on a stage the first time.
Awesome. And when actually did you do your first keynote?
So I started commentating fashion shows when I was 25 in New York City. I wrote my first book that came out when I was 24. It was called Specialty Modeling, Everything You Need to Know About Hand, Shoe, or Character Modeling. It was originally called What You Need to Know, How to Make a Living as a Model If You're Not Perfect. Okay. So that was it was a funny book. And we, my co-author and I, because most of the things I've done successfully in my life have been in partnership, which is why the speaking business is weird, because it's a very solo activity. Joe, it's why you and I partnered during the pandemic and created an entire course, because I needed a partner to do stuff with.
Okay. And so in this, now you're out looking, you wrote this book. Then how did, we all know that you're part of what used to be the Carolyn Strauss Collection. How did that all come about?
So I was a plus size model in New York. And then I started commentating fashion shows in New York. Again, right place, right time. The commentator didn't show up. It was at Macy's in New Jersey in Cherry Hills, right near Pennsylvania. And I got asked, of all of the models that were there, I got asked by the buyer at Macy's, "Carolyn, can you commentate this show?" And I said, "Sure." I'd been in enough shows. I knew what a commentator did. I was an actor. Give me a microphone. I'm happy. Jumped on, did it. And after the show was over, she said, "If I canceled this woman, the commentator, for the rest of the shows, will you commentate the rest of my fashion shows?"
And when you say commentator for a fashion show, for those of us that don't know, what does that mean?
So you grab the microphone and you talk about what clothing can do for women. So I was the top plus size fashion show commentator in the United States for about 20 years. And it was when plus sizes was really, it went from half sizes to plus sizes for anybody who's been around in the fashion industry as long as I was. And they started making plus size clothes. Liz Claiborne started making plus size clothes and Ralph Lauren started making them. And all of the department stores started having a plus size department. So they would hire me to come in and commentate their plus size fashion shows. I have spent time, this is one of my points of pride, in every state in the United States. And when I say spend time, changing planes in an airport doesn't count. You've actually spent a night in that state. And I have spent time in every state in the United States, mostly because of my fashion show commentating business.
Okay. Well, how did your own collection come about? Where did that come from?
So I was modeling and I had written a book, my book called Specialty Modeling. Right. And then one of my modeling clients, he said, you know, we should do something with this. And oh, I created an exercise video, a plus size exercise video, because I realized that I was never going to be Jane Fonda and am not a fan of Richard Simmons. And I have some very personal Richard Simmons stories. We can talk about those over cigars and cocktails at the next Cigar Peg mastermind somewhere.
We won't pollute this with Richard.
Yeah, we won't do that. So I created a plus size exercise video and I spent about $20,000 creating this exercise video when it was actually on videotape.
Okay.
This is back in the day. And I designed the leotards that myself and my two backup exercise dancers wore and was working with a client, a plus size modeling client of mine. And I said, look, I just spent all this money. Why don't we create a line of exercise clothes and package it with the exercise video and sell it on the Home Shopping Network? And we went to the Home Shopping Network and we had a meeting with the executives and they said, nope, we don't do videos. We don't sell videos and we don't sell exercise clothes. And I said, but you should. And they said, no. And we got up to leave and they said, but wait a minute. We love you as a designer and a spokesperson. And we love you, they said to my business partner, as a manufacturer, why don't you guys try a line of sportswear? And that was in 1997 and it worked. And we did it starting in 1997 until 2015. So while I was building my speaking business, that was coinciding with that.
And how often were you on air?
Every 3 to 4 weeks. Okay. I had a Today's Special 2 or 3 times a year, meaning that I had to do about $1 million of sales in one day or I wasn't successful. And I did that for 18 years I was on HSN.
And what brought that to a close?
HSN and QVC merged. They decided that they wanted to go all celebrity and brand name driven. They wanted to be more of a department store and less of offering something completely unique to their customers. So in 2015, they decided that my brand was not something they wanted to keep going with.
But they stayed with CSC Collection, right?
Nope.
No, that went away.
No, it went when I went away, it went away. Yeah. So it was the Carolyn Strauss Collection until 2008. In 2008, when the economy collapsed, we changed the name. We went to CSC Studio and it was CSC Studio from 2008 to 2015.
That's what that came in at.
Yes.
Okay. So then when that ended.
Can we stop talking about it since it ended? I'm bored. Time.
No. It was more than I expected. I was
Sorry. Just
trying to cut to the chase. When it ended, that's when you went full-time speaking?
No, I was doing full-time speaking before it. HSN was really, my clothing company was really my part-time thing. Right. Yeah, I was doing two things. I was doing four things simultaneously, right? When I was in New York, I was modeling and I was commentating and I was speaking and I was writing and I was doing talk shows and blah, blah, blah.
What was the concentration or gist of your speaking?
It was actually self-esteem for plus size women and for women.
Okay.
I spoke mostly to women's groups, and how I got into speaking for more business stuff was actually through NSA. In 2008, Vistage became a sponsor for the winter workshop at NSA. And I went and I did an audition for them, having no idea what they were or what they were doing and if I had anything to say to men. And, about 2 months later, I get a call from Vistage saying, we loved your tape. We just didn't like your support materials. And I said, what support materials? And they said, the ones from when you did the audition. I said, I didn't have any support materials. So, you know, I kind of created some and started speaking for businesses.
Okay. And I want to go back, though. You jumped ahead, which you were doing the self-esteem. What was your audience? Where were you speaking at?
God, I'm trying to remember. Everywhere. I mean, mostly women's groups all over the country. So women would hear me commentate a show and then ask me to come speak at their women's organization. Oh, okay. And it makes me mad when women's organizations want to support women in business and then don't want to pay women business owners. So that's definitely a pet peeve of mine.
All right. And let me ask you this. So now, you've done all of this and we're sitting here today and we're going to go back to that 49 years that you mentioned. If you could go back and give advice to yourself when you were a teenager, what advice would you give yourself?
Get married, get divorced, because alimony is a whole lot easier than what you're doing right now.
All right, there you go. Well, that's an
interesting... And invest in Starbucks.
Invest in Starbucks. Now, see, that's a solid. I like that one. Carolyn, who, as you went through your career, has anyone risen to the level where you would say they're your biggest supporter, mentor, role model? Who would it be?
So one of my biggest supporters was my friend Peter, who I was friends with when I was in high school. And he came in and did a program at my high school and we became friends. And he was all about the entertainment business. So he said, you can go be in the entertainment business. And I thought, okay. So I moved to New York and auditioned for Broadway shows and became a plus size model with the Ford Modeling Agency. I mean, I was short, chubby, and cute. Who knew that I could make a living as a model, right? I've always been this size. Actually, I was a little bit bigger in New York. You guys all know me. I am not a skinny girl, but I made a living as a model. So Peter Bezimis, who I still love very, very much. I've had mastermind groups, many of whom are people who are in the Cigar Peg, who have supported me and loved me and pushed me.
And how long have you been in Cigar Peg?
That is a great question. I'm going to say at least 14, 15 years, at least.
So you've been around for the majority of the Cigar Peg.
Yeah.
Before the Cigar Peg happened, can you think back then and say, oh my God, who was it that mentored you or helped you back then?
I don't know. Isn't that interesting? I don't want to say I did it by myself, but I kind of didn't know that you could ask for help.
No, sure.
I was in a mastermind group, Catherine Crowley and Kathy Elster. They had a company called Small Business Strategy back in New York, and I knew I needed outside eyes. So I joined. It was a pre-Vistage type organization.
Okay.
So they helped me.
Great. Okay.
And I know a lot of people are going to listen to this and be mad that I'm not mentioning them, but we'll get to them.
No, that's not really, people aren't judging for that. They want to know, I mean, I'm looking for the big, I'm looking at it right now going, so your teenage self, get married, get divorced, and learn to ask people for help.
Yes.
So that's kind of what I'm hearing. When you wake up and you're feeling stuck and you can't seem to get motivated, what turns you on? What makes you move? What makes you tick?
A hot yoga class, a spin class, a body pump class, a trip to Red Rocks. I live in Denver, a trip to Red Rocks where I can see the beautiful sunrise or the beautiful scenery and go do the steps there. I am completely connected to my body. And if my body isn't moving, my brain isn't moving.
Okay. So, I mean, getting out of bed is just a function of knowing you're going to the gym.
Yeah. I have to do something. COVID almost killed me, by the way.
Okay.
For me, I mean, you know me, Joe, really well. And you know that COVID almost killed me because I am 100% externally motivated. I get ideas when I talk to other people. I move more when I'm with other people who are moving. Being alone is not good for me. And I find that interesting. I was looking at this recently. For somebody who's never been married and doesn't have children, the fact that being alone isn't good for me, I find that really weird.
Well, I get it. Let me ask you this. I don't want to go backwards for a minute. When you said you were doing self-esteem, what guided you into that racket? I mean, that's a very niche market. Was it just because you were exposed to plus size models? What made you go, I'm going to help people?
I was short. I was chubby. And I was making $200, $500 an hour as a model. And I thought, nobody can tell me what my body size should be, what my body shape should be, and what I should look like, because I get paid to look like this. And I realized that other women, so many of them, were feeling badly about walking around and using their energy and their life force, feeling bad about what they look like. or how they felt or how clothes looked on them. And I thought, that's ridiculous. That is a waste of energy. And then after I studied with a woman named Alison Armstrong for about 25 years. And she, her website is understandmen.com. And there's a whole part of being female that we have this voice in our head that says we're not enough. And I have really had to learn to overcome that and then go out and teach it to other women, because we are using so much of our energy feeling bad about who we are or what we look like. It is what it is. It's not what it's not. I used to say when I was in my 20s, look, this is my body is not a democracy. It's a dictatorship. I own it and you don't get to vote. And that's how I've always lived my life.
Good line.
Thank you.
Throughout your career, looking back, what would you say was the biggest mistake or failure you ever experienced?
Being unprepared. I've been a couple times, like I went on stage, one of the first fashion shows I was ever given the opportunity to do. And it was at the Bon Marché in Seattle. So all of my Seattle friends will remember the Bon Marché. And I went out there and it was the biggest plus size fashion show in the industry. And I was 25 years old and I thought I knew everything. And I went out there in front of this audience of women who had been experiencing these fabulous shows. And I thought I could do better, but I didn't research enough. And I went out there and I bombed, and it was an awful feeling. And now I overprepare.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, there was that. I spent a year trying to teach my clients to take a nap with their clients and customers. And a nap was a new attitude and perspective. But the flaw in the plan is that nobody wants their employees to take a nap or sleep with their clients and customers, which right. I think is a waste that, you know, we can't do that. But that's different. That's a different
podcast. It might just improve sales.
I'm just saying.
Well, if somebody came up to you today and said, I want to go into the speaking business, what do you think the strongest advice you could give them would be?
Talk about something that nobody else can talk about in the way that you can talk about it. And if you're not passionate about it and you're not an expert in it, don't go be a hairstylist if your hair looks like crap. Don't go be a professional speaker if you're not good at it. Sorry, get a coach, learn to speak properly, learn to be on stage, learn to use the stage properly, take some acting classes, and find people who are doing what you want to be doing and stalk them online.
Fair enough. So encouraging stalking here in the Cigar Lounge.
Stalking and sleeping with people. Isn't this what the Cigar Peg expects from me? Come on, Joe.
This is what I'm getting here. And let me ask you.
Just wait till Dale gets a hold of this.
You mentioned Cherry Hill. You mentioned New York. You mentioned being in every state. Where are you originally from?
Marblehead, Massachusetts. I was born on the coast in Massachusetts. Actually, I was born in Salem, so I am a witch.
Okay.
And I grew up in Marblehead. And this is my favorite time of year because it's Thanksgiving. It's the time for all the leaves have changed and the beautiful colors and all of the warmth and apple cider and apple picking and all of those happy things. So this is my favorite time of year. So thank you for asking me to be on this episode, Joe. Right.
And when?
Because I'm so grateful.
No, this is fun. When did you leave Marblehead?
I went to UMass Amherst for a year. Okay. So I went my first year in college there. Then I went to the University of Madrid in Spain and lived in Spain for a year. I think everybody should go live in another country because it opens up options. My gosh, we're never stuck. You're never, ever, ever stuck. Oh, and my aunt Susan is very cool. And she told me when I was about 16 years old, she said, if you have a mouth, you'll never be lost. And that gave me so much comfort knowing that I could go anywhere in the world. And if I have a mouth and can communicate, or if you can do pantomime, if you're somewhere where you don't speak the language, you'll never be lost, which is very cool.
Well,
So I went to UMass and then I went to University of Madrid. And then I finished at Emerson College in Boston and got my theater degree. And then the day after I graduated from college, I moved to New York City. and spent 20 years there. And after 9/11, New York stopped feeling like home. And I looked around and thought, where do I want to go? And I, since I've been in every state in the United States, every time I land in Denver, my body goes, ah. And I thought, okay, let's try that for 6 months. And here it is 19 years later. And I'm really happy.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So you've been a speaker a long time.
Forever.
So I'm asking you to dig back and in your history, what are some of the myths that you think people believe about the speaking industry that you could dispel for them?
I thought if I was really good, I would get booked.
Right.
And the speaking business is the finding gigs business.
Right.
That's the business we're in. And I'm terrible at that. That's the part that I am worst at. I am horrible at technology. I am not good at follow-up. I am not good at running a CRM. I am not good at having employees. I've had them. I need them. I don't have them right now. It's the running the business part of the business. So the myth is, if you're good, people will see you on stage and hire you. Yes, that happens sometimes, but not all the time. If you have a great story, or one of the myths was if you've had some horrible trauma and overcome it, or you've climbed a mountain, or you've hang glided off a mountain or something, then you have a story that people will pay to hear. That is not true. We're in the business of getting gigs.
And was there a time in your career where the gigs came easier?
Yes.
When
I was younger, and when I was starting my home shopping thing, because I was on television, people, okay, I would reach out and people would say, oh, you're on TV. Sure. We'll hire you. The challenge was I still didn't run a very efficient business, like the business part of the business. And after a little while, that stops being a novelty.
Got it. Yep.
Yeah.
The celebrity goes away.
Yeah. I mean, unless you keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. Right. And I didn't. No, exactly. And I didn't. And one of the biggest mistakes I made is I did not push the celebrity, in quotes, part of my business when I had it. I didn't think it was that special. In fact, when you and I first met, I didn't even talk about home shopping. I almost never talk about home shopping. It's like a blip on my website. I don't think I'm doing this business right, actually. I'm still not doing it right. And I've only been doing it for at least 49 years.
If you, well, I guess you've been doing it for 49 years. Now we have a number. See, there's a number. No, that number keeps coming up. But let me say this. In that 49 years, have you ever thought, I'm quitting? I'm done.
No, because there's always something to look forward to on my calendar. So I've never had a nothing in front of me. So no, and I don't know what else I would want to do. And I know that sounds weird. I mean, I love doing my podcast. Look, I loved playing with you during the pandemic, Joe. I know you're not talking about it for some reason. I'm very proud.
Well, because I don't talk about me on this.
Proud of what you and I created. We created Brilliant 100, 100 minutes to brilliant blended meetings on how to have meetings on Zoom. We taught people how to do this. Right. And that was amazing. And I was very proud of that. And Dale, I mean, who everybody knows, Dale Irvin, who is my partner on our podcast that we've been doing for more than 3.5 years, Another Day Above Ground, which, by the way, I just lucked into. Oh, also everything I've ever done, I've lucked into it.
Well, and let's slow down for a minute, because I was going to ask you that. Another Day Above Ground is a podcast you do with
every
Dale
week.
And Tim
Slagle. Yep. Who's one of the most brilliant comedians on the planet.
And it is the podcast for baby boomers, correct?
The podcast for people who can't download a podcast. Yes. There, that's the flaw in the plan.
And how long have you been doing it?
Over 175 episodes. So 3.5 years. We have not made any money from it. I don't know how. So if anybody listening can help us with that, we don't have sponsors. We haven't made any money from it, but thank God for it, because it keeps me sharp. It keeps my brain on the edge. When you play with two of the smartest, funniest people on the planet, you've got to bring your A game, and they keep me on the edge. And thank God for them during the pandemic. because thank God for you that we created this whole fun program that we could market Brilliant 100. And they kept me every week. They gave me something to do every week with other people that kept my brain sharp.
Right. No, no, I think that's great. And I just want to make sure we slow down enough to plug it because it's a fun podcast.
Thank you.
If you right now, if someone were to give you 10 times your current operating budget, what would you spend the money on?
I would actually hire someone to be in my office 2 days a week and get my CRM up and running and put together some marketing pieces and target a specific audience, which I've still never figured out, and go out and get me. I would want to do 4 keynotes or day-long trainings per month. Okay. If I could do 4 a month, I'd be really happy.
And I'm going to stop for a minute because we're getting towards the end. So if anybody listening to this podcast wants to be able to get a hold of you, what is the best way to get you and what are you most responsive to? How can people
A really expensive dinner, a great bottle of wine, boxes of very nice chocolate, a zip lining experience. I'm all about the experience. So that's what they can do to be in my good graces. The way they can find me to invite me to that is they can go to carolynstrauss.com, carolynstrauss.com and contact me there. My phone number is right on the website.
And if they simply ship a gift certificate and airline tickets to Bali, that'll get you to call them.
Ding, ding. You win. See, Joe, you know me so well.
Yeah, we're making sure. Okay,
but wait, but get permission from your wife first. I need a handwritten signed note. I do not play with other kids' toys without their permission.
Perfect. No, yep. There you go. I just want people to know to make sure they know, because there might be that one person out there going, God, I'm looking for someone to go to Bali with. So let me close by asking this question. Do you consider yourself to be successful?
I consider myself to be happy.
And?
So I think success is externally judged. So if I look back and I step out of myself and look, I go, yeah, she's done a really good job. She's had a good life. She's happy. But if I look at it internally and judge it, there's always more I could do. There's always more I want to do. I'm not done. Like, I don't want to get a lifetime achievement award yet. Because you know, I'm not there yet. Now I would take my CPAE though. That I would take, but a lifetime achievement award, no. So am I successful? I'm happy.
That's what matters. Thank you for joining us in the Cigar Lounge. And everyone, that was Carolyn Strauss. Carolyn, thank you and have a great day.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
And we thank you, our listener members. Please join us every 2 weeks as we drop a new episode, placing another Cigar Peg member in the spotlight of the Cigar Lounge.